This is a production of Cornell University.
I now call the meeting to order at 4:38 p.m. Tuesday, October 16th. The first order of business. The media has been distributed to you for Tuesday, September 25th. Is there any amendments to the agenda or minutes? No? The minutes have been approved for Tuesday, September 25th. Next, we have reports. Please keep the reports as short as possible for today's meeting because we have a lot of presentations. So first up, Adam Gillen from Student Assembly.
Sure. I actually haven't been here before this year. I've classed out, worked out an arrangement professor, but really early for my class. So basically, a lot of the initiatives we're working on right now are revolving around sexual assault. I'm not sure what Melissa updated you on last time, but I see that she discussed the blue transportation, but we also have some more ideas that are coming out that we would love to collaborate on, potentially an iPhone app for the blue light system. Potentially, we are in very preliminary talks with Orientation Steering Committee about a potential information session around sexual assault to the freshman class when they first get here. And a couple other initiatives which I will circulate outside, given that we have on the agenda. But I'm excited for the meeting.
Thank you, Adam. Next, Mitch for GFPA.
We're continuing to work on the Graduate Community Initiative. For those of you who aren't fully familiar with that, the document that was prepared in 2007 by the CPSA and focuses on, identifying issues in the graduate professional community and conventions of the administration as kind of things that we'd like to get together and also things for us to follow up on. So we're doing an update of that. It was done in 2007, so we're kind of taking a five-year approach to it and really update. So we're still working on that, pushing ahead. Another thing that we're doing that might be of interest to this group is working with Mary Lane Cummings and her team on the state utilization study. We formed an ad hoc committee to help them out with a grad special team. So kind of exciting. And anyone else is working on that from the assembly perspective?
Thank you, Mitch. Tanya for Employee Assembly.
Just to update, we had the President's address to the staff last Monday when very successfully we had somewhere between 400 and 450 people there, which was really great. And I don't know yet if we have info on how many watched it live, but we streamed it live. So that, I think, went very well. He talked about the various incidents that happened on campus and also gave an update on where we are with the employee survey. And then the EA had a follow-up meeting with the President and Mary yesterday and continued to talk about ways that employees could, the respect the Cornell program, the choice and destination diversity issues. So that's kind of what we had the past couple weeks.
The EA awarded the grounds department for dedicated service award this year, and that was very well received. And I think that was it.
Thank you. Joe is not in attendance. Is anybody from the Faculty Senate willing to make a short presentation on what they have been doing?
I guess I'm the one. but I wasn't at the Senate meeting last week because I was out of time. My substitute, I haven't gotten together yet to figure out what happened.
I'm so sorry. We have a new note taker, and I was just wondering if you could say your name for his benefit. Thank you. You got it.
That's all.
All right. Thank you, Bob. I would like to propose a late addition to the agenda. We have Dejahi Willie from the Native American students at Cornell here at the meeting, and he would like to make a short presentation. Is anybody opposing to the late addition? I hear no opposition. So today we have in our meeting a number of student leaders of minority communities. The University Assembly would like to be attuned to the challenges and recommendations of our minority communities, and we hope to work to improve diversity and inclusion on Cornell's campus. So I would like the University Assembly members to please wait until the end of all presentations before asking questions at the open discussion. Questions will be taken in order of recognition and will be put onto a speaker's list. Please keep all questions concise and under a minute. First, I would like to recognize Jahi Willie to make his presentation.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jahi Wiley. I'm the co-chair of Native American Students at Cornell. I would say that first and foremost, in terms of addressing diversity from the American Indian perspective on campus, we need to recognize that we're on Cayuga land. Cornell is built on the traditional homelands of the Cayuga people. They're one of the six nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. New York State is Haudenosaunee territory. We think that in Cornell publications and also Cornell representatives of Cornell are speaking, we need to be more cognizant of this fact and more sensitive to acknowledging them. Another primary concern is recruitment and retention. And just from the American Indian perspective, it's like identity gets complicated when we're talking about diversity. I think we need to have a deeper understanding of the concept of diversity and just that these people checking off the box. I think that just speaking from my own personal perspective, I think that Cornell needs to make a greater effort to recruit tribal communities, just to be reservation communities, and also urban areas. For example, Minneapolis has a large urban native population. There are a lot of high schools, Native communities that I think Cornell have a greater presence at. Just in terms of looking at Cornell's peers in the Ivy, Dartmouth has a very strong Native American program. And in Indian country, Dartmouth's program, when people think about Native recruitment and Natives in higher education, they really think about Dartmouth first. I think Cornell needs a greater push to, you know, being found in that area and having Cornell be thought of more readily by people. And also in terms of retention, I'm very involved with the American Indian program here at the Excellence Program. Just any resources that could be directed toward KIP to make the community stronger and strengthen the programs that are already ongoing would be very helpful. And I'm not sure, I suppose everyone is familiar with the GUEO, which is the American Indian program out on campus. AIP is at 400 Caldwell Hall.
Thank you very much. Since he is leaving, we will initially ask if anybody has questions. Since Dejahi is going to leave the meeting early, if anybody have any questions for him, please ask that now.
Do you know if either classes or departments do any outreach or any workshops or in the way that Cornell individuals go out into the community, whether it's working with, you know, a township or a county or city district or something. Do you know of any programs or departments that you work with, maybe like preservation across the country, whether
well, AIP, the student support specialist in Kathy Holliday, she often travels around and looks at our conferences and whatnot.
students and have them apply to Cornell. Besides that, AIP has had a mentoring and like tutoring program at eight high schools in the area. One of them is outside of the city, so they're going to dominate. And the other one is in the Falls, working with outside youth students there. Besides that, like outside of AIP going after, I'm not sure that Cornell doesn't decide like AIP is already going. So what I'm advocating for is Cornell actually kind of taking on some of this work itself.
Yeah, I know. In fact, it's okay if I can offer comments.
Yep.
I'm in city regional planning. We do a lot of outreach to, you know, for instance, one of the classes is doing writing the building code for the town of Wayne by Jacob. So that's some of the outreach we do. And I'm from the Midwest, and a lot of universities do outreach with different American communities. And I think that if departments like city regional planning can work more with, you know, perhaps there's an infrastructure upgrade or infrastructure issue on a particular reservation site or, and, you know, in a place of need, that departments can be encouraged to build those kinds of choices. I think that's good for students to get exposed to that and to make their communities and give Cornell a chance to give back in that way.
Gregory?
How else have you asked Cornell to do more? You know, what sort of avenues have you taken? Who have you talked to? What kind of discussions have you had to kind of see some of the solutions? You are the great community, the organization, you know, the different avenues that you have to represent the community.
I don't really want to talk about AIG or what the exact concern is now. I'm only going to be
Adam?
It was sort of along the lines of Greg's question. It was more just like if you've spoken to admissions offices yet, and if not, would you like to, you know, connect with them in the future? Definitely.
Any other questions for the Jahi? All right, thank you. Thank you for being here today. Next, we have Camila Alabilsu from the African, Latino, Asian, Native American Student Programming Board, also known as ALANA.
Us as a programming board, why we have added intercultural to it is because one of the things that we noticed as the largest multicultural organization on campus was that you have all these cultural groups, not majority groups, doing efforts, but there was this disconnect in terms of really addressing the intersectionality of it, addressing multiple identities, having Haven working with, you know, other organizations, ethnic organizations, not just having separate and, you know, pockets of different people doing different types of social justice. And so that's something that we're urging the community and the university to focus more on, the fact that it isn't just, you know, an LGBT issue versus a Black issue versus a Latino issue versus an American Indian, but that there are all these intersections. There are people of multiple different ethnic backgrounds. There are people from different, you know, multiple identities. Class is a huge issue as well. And so how do we tackle on all those things rather than separating them, but also not just tokenizing people as being, oh, you know, this group should talk about this because it's the, you know, umbrella group for the Latino organization. But I think anyone should talk about Latino issues, not just particularly Latin people. And so us as an organization, we've been trying to push for, you know, more ways to get more people from different backgrounds in a room to address that, to address all these different social constructs. And in that, what we've actually realized is that, unfortunately, there had to be a discussion last night called Dining with Diverse Leaders addressing solidarity and social justice. And one of the things we noticed was by doing this sort of work, which is inherently difficult to do because we're talking about sensitive issues and topics like race, gender, and sexuality, is that it's sometimes really hard to make that change. I mean, as you guys would know, being a part of the university assembly, it's hard to make progress. We're talking about sensitive topics. And one of the things that came up was we realized that even amongst ourselves and student leaders, not just Alana, but other organizations as well, there was poor communication. And so in terms of communication, there emerged this trend of cyberbullying, which happened. And I don't know if some of you are aware of something that came out a couple weeks ago. An anonymous group called Scorpion X sent around they created a 16-page spread called The Cornell Night and Moon, in which it parodied different groups on campus, particularly social justice groups on campus, as well as other prior histories that group Scorpion X has done in terms of bullying specific organizations. And that's something that us as Alana, but also just in general amongst different student leaders, have been concerned about in terms of how are we communicating with each other in terms to make change, how are we actually going beyond our own bias, which we all inherently have, to really work together and do something. And so I would really urge that the UA looks at that as a real issue, because it has been something that has affected people. I know that people in the Dean of Students office, the SA has talked about this, as well as people at the JA as well, trying to create a new policy. The campus code of conduct does not have anything in terms of just bullying, maybe harassment, but in terms of bullying, and where would cyber violence fit in that? Because it is very real, and it does have an impact. And so I guess that's something that I would ask that we address today, or ask for you all to think about, because even when it comes to things that affect mental health, we forget that, once again, it's intersectionality. Mental health means a very different thing in different communities. And sort of looking at how certain communities are communicating with each other, especially social justice ones, and how our sort of passion for wanting to make change can get in the way of us actually being respectful of how we communicate.
Thank you, Camila. Can you wait until the end of all reports to be asked questions?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Way from Capsu is not here right now. So we are going to skip ahead to Oscar Corella, the president of La Asociación Latina.
Everyone before me, hi everyone, my name is Oscar Correa and I'm the co-president of La Asociación Latina. I'm the co-president of my class at the moment. So I thought it would be helpful if I just gave you a quick rundown of the resources that the students have on campus. Specifically the Latino students is a three-pronged kind of system. So first of all, let me talk about the Latino community. The Latino community makes up anywhere from 7 to 11% of the campus, and it's a very diverse community. Multiple generation Americans, people coming abroad, mainly from New York City, but we have a lot of growth from Texas, California, and other states in the U.S. Within the Latino community, there's a diversity in terms of the countries that people come from, their status here in the U.S., where they come from in the U.S., and of course all the other types of diversity that we encounter. So one of the first resources is the Latino Studies Program, the Latin American Studies Program. This year, the Latino Studies Program had its 25th anniversary, and it came about through student protests through the takeover of State Hall for that to be something that was available on campus. Like other departments and programs on campus, it has been facing budget cuts, even though the students are rallying for it to offer a major. At the moment, it only offers a minor, and students are really hoping 4.0 take the lead in providing majors and more opportunities for graduate students in ethnic studies. The other resource is the Latino Living Center, which is a program housed through 4.0 housing. And something that I want to say overall, and maybe some of the other speakers are going to mention, is that our current houses provide great programming, but I think that the university could do more to support them in terms of infrastructure. The university, there's a large degree of inequality between housing on campus housing basically costs the same, but if you live on West Campus, you have much nicer facilities than if you live on North. And even within North Campus, there are different levels of facilities. And all of the program houses are facilities that are, in my opinion, worse off than other facilities. And then, of course, you have the Senatina, which is the umbrella organization for Latino organizations on campus. There's about 25 specific organizations that focus on Latino issues and Latino identity, and we try to support them and our member orgs. Other resources that you may know of are Awadi and 66. I think that the main issue with them is that they're understaffed, and they're trying the best that they can do with what they're doing, but they don't have enough staff members to do all the critical services that they need to go out and do. So for me, it's very hard to talk about diversity issues, anti-oppression, and speak specifically about the Latino community because we're all interconnected, and it's not just the minority student issue, it's all of our issues, including students, faculty, and staff members. So Cornell boasts about the diversity of students on campus. Every year they say that it's the most diverse class coming in. But diversity in numbers is not where we need to end, and that's not creating the necessary change that Cornell needs. Cornell needs to move beyond advertising and marketing its numbers and going into creating an inclusive environment for everyone on campus and really embracing diversity. So the first thing that I'd like to mention is the violence on campus. We can't have inclusion if there's violence on campus. This year started off with multiple race-based, gender-based, and sexual orientation-based hate crimes and violence claims against students, one of which was a hate crime against a Latino graduate student that was walking in the street and was an egg was thrown at him. Just this weekend, a friend of mine who's Latino was attacked by a group of white students, and they broke his tooth, and he can't afford to repair his tooth, and the university has thought to help him, but these just show that the campus isn't as inclusive as there is violence that students are facing, and I think we need to do more to address that. But then when we move away from the violence that I'm talking about, we also need to just look at how we're represented on campus. So already at Ivy League universities and universities in general and throughout the whole educational system, we're underrepresented, and there's a variety of structural reasons for that. But then we get to Cornell University. Latinos make up 17% of the national population. We make up 7 to 11% of the Cornell population, so we're underrepresented. But then we get here, and we're even further underrepresented in structures like this one and like others on campus where the actual decision-making is taking place. There's Cornell boasts about the diversity of its students, but there's a serious lack of diversity of faculty and staff members. That's really important to us because we look at faculty and staff members as role models, and if we don't have those people there, then we have less role models to look up to. It also places an unfair burden on the faculty and staff members that are here because they have many more students coming to them for help, and you all know Cornell has faced a staff cut, and staff and faculty of color have a higher burden because of how underrepresented they are. I think that we're further underrepresented in the beat system, which in my opinion really sets the fraternities and sororities really sets the campus culture, and I think that's something that should be addressed. And I think that there's a lack of diversity on student governing boards that make decisions, such as the student assemblies, and some of the committees that make up the student assemblies that decide how much money should be allocated to student organizations, that decide the resolutions that are being passed and may affect student life. So a lot of this has been negative. I do think that there are some bright spots, and I really hope to go forward and work together with everyone to create some positive changes. Some of those positive changes and things that students are asking for, and I hope that that you all in the university are taking seriously, is creating a university-wide diversity and anti-oppressive course requirements. In my opinion, the university has gotten used to saying that we're a large decentralized university and it's really hard to do anything here, and we can't allow that to go on, because when I have friends that are being attacked on the weekend, and when I have friends at RFA to walk home at night, it's not fair to them to say, I'm sorry, we have 7 colleges and you have to go out and you yourself as a student have to take time out of your schedule to go and lobby your dean to create these requirements. I think that more should be done on a greater university level for that. And there's also the forums. You inviting us here is a very important step. There's the Leadership Roundtable that was created by Renee Alexander at 66, which is giving student leaders an opportunity to talk to each other, and I think they have been very helpful in creating solutions. And I hope that it doesn't just stay at students, but that faculty and staff are really involved in the decision-making process for things going forward. So that's all that I have for you today. Thank you so much for having me, and I hope that I didn't take anybody's thunder. But like I said, everything's interconnected. A lot of the same issues.
Thank you so much, Oscar. Next, we have Selim, and Shannon is not here. Am I correct? Okay. Should we wait for Shannon?
How far away is she? Maybe she could just get started then. If that's okay.
Hi everyone, I'm Salam. I'm the co-president of CSU. Oscar did actually touch on a lot of the things that I was talking about. So what I'm going to do now is just going to really focus on what it means to be, like, diversity from an African diaspora side view. So first I want to define a couple of terms, because I feel like when we talk about diversity, we like talk about it a lot as a form of interracial relations, and we don't really look at it from as a form of diversity within groups. Interracial relations is very important. So I want to define a few terms. First, I want to define what the African diaspora is. And basically, that is the region of African people throughout the world. It's kind of that process. It's the relocation of Africans throughout the world. And then you have the term black. Black, to me, can be used interchangeably with African diaspora. It's just a formation or a race-based formation of different subgroups, which includes African, which are people who live in the continent of Africa, who can trace their roots back to Africa. Well, not trace their roots, but who have some sort of identity, who have some sort of culture rooted in Africa. Then you have African American, which is a slave, and that's a totally different identity than African. And then you have African Latinos, who are those who identify with the African diaspora and Latino culture. And then you have African Caribbeans, which are those who identify with the African diaspora, black, and Caribbean culture. So as far as black population, I know there are approximately 5% of us here. That translates to about 170 to about 200 students in the incoming class out of like 3,000. So that right there just really gives you a lens of how many of us are enrolling in here. I was told that matriculation is too low, but they're saying that they've been accepting us at higher rates, but they're not matriculating. So how do we figure out how can we get students to matriculate? Yeah, they're getting accepted, but why aren't they choosing to enroll here? And that kind of brings us to just the breakup, whatever students make for now. So it's important to realize that although it may seem like it's one monolith of student people, it's really not. Like, you have students here who are from wealthy suburban areas, who went to private schools, and who have experience with racial diversity and intellectual diversity and economic kind of school diversity. So you have schools where there are private schools and you have students from lower income to go there, and they do experience some sort of economic diversity, but that's not as much. But you have those students who already have that experience, work with different cultures, work with people who have perspective, work with people who are more privileged. So when they come here, it's kind of a different mindset. And then you have those who went to public schools and some public schools are obviously amazing, but I'm talking more about the kids from inner city areas who have a different viewpoint of what it means to live in America, what it means to interact with people. For a lot of these people, you grow up in an area where everyone looks like you don't have experience. So when you leave, and you come to an institution like Cornell, it's really hard for you to get activated. And then also, there are first-generation students here whose parents are immigrants from different cultures, whose parents come from Caribbean, whose parents come from Latin American countries, whose parents come from Africa, and they have a totally different experience as well. And there are also legacy students. I know when everybody talks about legacy students, we don't talk about white, but that's also apparent. And I think what this all says is that Blacks, Latinos, Asians, everyone. It's really important to realize that although I know here we're, at Cornell, it's easier for us to accept diversity because we're in a place where we have a common end goal of wanting to succeed. We have a common goal of achievement. This is not found in the real world. So it's important to realize that people here, we don't represent a homogenous group of social interactions or social experiences, economic experiences, and cultural experience. And I also wanted to bring up the fact that because a lot of people have different experiences within all groups, it's really hard for some people to come here and recognize their perceived differences. What I mean by that is that some students within groups feel distant from other students in that same group because sometimes they might have never been exposed to different people who look like them. One example that I'll use regarding how to kind of display that interracial difference is I was reading this book and there was a description of how there were three black students in the class of all white students. And professor was talking about how he's talking about the statistics of how black women are more likely to have teenage pregnancy. One student raised his hand and said, "Why are you talking about this? Why are you making our racist ads?" And the other stood up and said, "Why are you?" The other black person in the classroom stood up and said, "Why are you trying to deflect that?" So even within that, that it just kind of shows the difference within groups, and I think that's important. I'm trying to see how we can reflect that in some sort of diversity-wide thing, but I think that in order to really talk about diversity and not make it something that's separate, we have to show people that diversity happens in different groups, and people don't realize that. And that's something that I think that kind of touched on as well. And so where I think that we come in, we have our student organizations, we have BSU, we have things like FLAG, which is Scholars of Independence to Graduate, which is a program that seeks to increase the black male graduation rate here at Cornell. We have these organizations that help the students, and then we have things like UJMA, which is our residential house, and Oscar really touched on how our program houses are there for us and for other people as well as to decimate knowledge. But it seems that there's a lack of support in it. I even want to talk a little bit about programming. I know that we have this great thing on diversity and how we want to try and make it so that everyone is included, but I also feel that it's important to recognize that these houses are here and our programming should also focus on really trying to expand our knowledge and not really trying to water down everything. That's one thing, and I also think that insight to go into what's going on with the infrastructure. And also we have this academic program, we have the Africana Center, which is very helpful and excellent resource. And another thing that I want to mention about the speaking groups is that I feel like a lot of programming on diversity, a lot of issues on diversity obviously happen on the students. One thing that we find to be kind of hard is that whenever we try to have programs, there's this issue of trying to find support, trying to find funding for it. Black History Month is a really big American event, historical event. Black History Month is also American History Month, or American History. And I find that a lot of times when we want to do these things, it always falls on us. We don't have that support. Whenever we want to do things, we always have to think about how are we going to get funded? Why do we have to, if we don't do it, no one else is going to do it. And I feel like that's there's some sort of initiative taking that's not taken on by the whole university. It's kind of, if we just don't do it, then it's not going to happen. Sadly, I just want to talk about what just to make it look like off your really good touch on a lot of things that I think don't want to understand. Shannon is other co-president
here. Shannon, sorry. Do you have anything to add to what Lum already said? All right, thank you so much, Lum. We are still waiting for Wei Yang, who is the president of Cornell Asian Pacific Islander Student Union. Oh, these seems to have read it long. While we're waiting for her, I would like to recognize a few people in attendance today. We have Chavez Carter from BGPSA. We also have Kanan Valentine from SAAGA. We also have Kathy Zellner from... from CUPD. She's a chief of CUPD. Thank you for coming here today. We also have Evan Carter. who is the former GPSA president. Am I missing anyone?
I think now would be a good time for open discussion.
I would like to invite all the presenters to sit in the front.
Or at the table.
Or at the table.
There's plenty of seats. So.
Shannon, would you like to be up there as well? Anybody have questions for our presenters? Randy.
I'd like to ask Oscar, is there any office on campus at any level that you feel like you can go to and have a real conversation that doesn't involve everybody that wants it?
There are a lot of staff members that I go to for advice and help. Some of the people that come to mind are Patricia Chung Nguyen. What's her last name? She's the director of the Asian American Resource Center, and she's an assistant or associate dean, and she's a resource to everyone. I go to her. There's also Mark Fulamar, the director of the Latino Living Center. He's been very active with talking to men about the sexual assault on campus and what we as men can do to change campus climate. There's also Renee Alexander, the director of the director of the Center for Cultural Dialogue. And those are just a few, but there are definitely people that I've seen. So.
Kyle?
Salam, right. You're... I thought you made some really good comments about the way that people are coming into Cornell. It's like a D6 bubble. That the way that, and I think that this is part of a general trend in American society and perhaps even the global society, that we're all kind of becoming siloed in our own little communities. Sociologists have this word called homophily. Basically that people are like-minded people are coming together and forming kind of self-reinforcing, thought communities. And, so the people are coming onto campus, so ingrained, without a broad perspective. I'm troubled by, what can we do, to kind of break that bubble? If this is a product of a larger kind of macro social process by which we're all kind of going into our own little bubbles, for lack of a more scientific term. What role can Cornell play, in fighting that?
I think one of the ways that we can influence how students come into Cornell or the experience that students have in Cornell, starting off first when they get here, before they get here, during orientation, you can have more of an emphasis on diversity. And I think one of the more tangible things might be trying to see how you can incorporate what we're trying to establish on campus in the freshman reading project. Like, how are we going to, what books do we want to read? Do we want books? Do we want them to read essays based on whatever, you know, based on different thinkers, things like that. I think it's really important to establish that before they get here, because when you get here, you are already just set in your own ways. And a lot of freshmen, because they're eager, they're going to want to know what's going on, you know, at Cornell. A lot of them are going to read. A lot of them are going to want to have discussions, or they're going to go to discussions. So maybe how are you going to facilitate questions based on reading? How are you going to facilitate discussions based on the idea that you're trying to find out? And you see more than just tapestry. Tapestry doesn't have a follow-up. You go to tapestry one time, and that's it. So it needs to really start before they get here, and like that week, that it can, I think it will continue there, or more likely.
Mm-hmm.
If I can just add, I also think it matters what bubbles you look at and who you focus on, because oftentimes minority students are criticized for being in our bubbles or for creating our community spaces, but there's no look at what the majority in all of the senses, how they're creating their own bubble that's also exclusionary. One example that comes to mind is the program houses that I mentioned before. Every year, there's several articles in the Cornell Daily Sun and people in general criticizing the program houses for being exclusionary and for only catering to certain communities and for for self-segregating. And really, that's not the reality. These program houses are open to all Cornell students. I know that the incoming class of the Latino Living Center, the majority of them are not Latino or identify as Latino. And so, so there's a criticism of the lack of diversity there. But then when I look at the Greek system and the Greek chapters on campus, they don't even have statistics on diversity at a Cornell-wide level. So there really, there is no, we only look at the minority bubbles. We don't look at how the majority is creating bubbles that are excluding other people.
Liz, and then Alex, and then Evan.
Well, first of all, thank you guys so much for coming and presenting for us. It really does help to hear from a diversity of groups as well as the diversity of constituencies. I was wondering, and this is a very broad question to ask, do you have any concrete goals or for like short-term things that you would like to accomplish at a university-wide level? Or even longitudinal? I know we've heard a lot of different ideas, but I didn't know if there are any particular priorities that you guys can think of, in whatever order suits you.
Well, for me, I think that one of the things that's going on from the school right now is safety. And we have I think that one of the most tangible things right now is to establish some sort of bus system or some sort of everyday reliable way to get home. And I think that the university should fund an initiative like that that takes students home each night from the library on the bus, and we don't, like, something that doesn't have to include the TCAT. The TCAT stops at a certain time. The TCAT starts stop at 2:30 every night. It doesn't run it back until 5 a.m. So I think a lot of our peer institutions, things like that, I think is really important right now to see how we can work on our safety and how can we establish a sort of ban, system to get students home tonight. And it needs to be more than just 20 weeks. It needs to be more than just this ban. It needs to go on.
Camila?
I would add that I definitely agree with that. I'd also add to what I mentioned in my presentation, a sort of code regarding bullying, particularly bullying just in general, but also just cyberbullying, because now with the technology and as it continues to be faster, there are different venues in which people are attacking people. And we want to talk about campus safety, also emotional safety, and the impact that people can have in terms of mental health, attacking people's well-being and mental health through using other sorts of social networking and social media, as well as text messages and all that sort of stuff and emails. So I would like to see some sort of code or something that to have it very violates that, if there's something to go to. And I would also like to add, in terms of the topic of faculty came up, I think, when Juan was speaking. But also in terms of having faculty, also something required for faculty to become more aware in terms of teaching and in terms of not just having to address certain topics. I know all different schools are different, all different courses are different, but they have to sort of diversity statement in every syllabus that gets put out, like at the top, saying this is, you know, we're going to try to create a safe space here, saying something that, you know, should be mindful, setting up ground rules, addressing the fact that the issues that we brought up in terms of the lack of inclusion that does exist is something that exists in the classroom, and to have faculty members and professors address that as well in their courses, I think would be really powerful to have that support from your educators.
What I would say, first, as a side note to what Mom is saying, currently the what are the shuttles called? So they're currently funded, I think, mostly by the Women's Resource Center, which is a center on campus that is funded through the student activity. So students are currently paying for this bus system, and it's troubling that the Women's Resource Center is paying for a bus system that's used by all students, and that we are putting the burden on women to protect themselves rather than saying that this is a Cornell-wide problem and that sexual assault affects everyone on campus. I mentioned in my presentation about the university-wide diversity anti-oppression course requirement. I think that's something that a lot of students are pushing for. I think that we need something that's mandatory and that touches on a lot of these different issues that we've mentioned. And the university has started in a way with the interview dialogue class, but enrollment for that was very small. I was trained to be a facilitator, and they only enroll 24 students, so we need to be something that's mandatory. Too often, the people who are already interested in these topics and are already aware are the ones that go out and take these courses, and we're not putting the burden on people who don't care. And we need everyone to care, I think, be aware of these issues. So hopefully it's not a long-term goal. Hopefully it's something that we can do in the short to mid-term is to create that university lifetime.
Alex?
Yes,
sorry,
did you?
Sorry. Okay.
Can I respond?
Yeah.
Okay. The response to the blue being under the Women's Resource Center, the reason that it is under the WRC is because when the idea came about that it would be Byline funded, the applications were already due, so there's no way that blue could apply on its own. So it, because the WRC was involved in making it happen to begin with, it seemed like the best place where we could most easily get an allocation for blue. But I actually think that's a really good idea that we can explore, that maybe blue could become its own organization that would be, you know, that doesn't have to be, that would be in conjunction in some way with the WRC, but doesn't necessarily, you know, have to fall under the WRC. I think it's a really good idea. And then, you know, I mean, I'm not going to be here next fall when there are byline allocations, but then maybe you'll get more money if it's an organization. So talk about that.
Of course.
So one of the main things that we've been looking at, and so I'll go a couple of things that we've done and where we plan to build. So as of this year, we've been, the BGPSA, which is Black Graduate Professional Student Association, has had a strong effort into addressing the problems and the whatever issues are surrounding the Black Graduate Professional Student on campus, but not also with that, but also reaching out to other Graduate Student Associations, SACA, which we have present here at Keenan, LGSC, as well as the Indigenous Graduate Association. And what the biggest thing that we're necessarily concerned with is recruiting, and not just recruiting, but the retention of the students. students here, and when we, you know, Cornell has made significant efforts into bringing more students from diversity here. But the thing is, what do we do when we get them here? What type of structure, what type of foundation are we laying for them in order to not only come and survive, but succeed? So what we believe that we're doing now is to kind of come in and subsidize some of that community that these students may not be getting on the university level. One thing that came up, and I think it's started to be a recurring thing, is that when it comes to diversity, when it comes to diversity initiatives, they're strongly student-led. And, you know, with Cornell being the decentralized. That's everybody's favorite term. So the decentralized term, then it's like, well, you know, we have to come in from a different point of view. So one thing that we like to try to do is subsidize it. One thing that we would love to see is Cornell itself taking a more proactive step to assessing some of these needs. And to name some of these is isolation. Coming here to be, you know, the ones like I'm thinking of infectious diseases and not seeing another face like yours, or, you know, from like the same background from Mississippi or Southern guy, you know. So but I think that we made great strides in including ourselves, so we've been a part of a lot of the initiatives that we're looking at, we've been a part of. So in recruiting, we have members on the Graduate Student Diversity Council, which are assessing the needs of how can we retain students and how can we recruit students. You know, we're on those committees. We're on committees. EPSA is on committees for bringing the research committee for the new assistant dean of student life, General Mix. You know, we've been part of that process. So what, you know, what we've been doing is becoming more involved in the workings of the school, so, you know, we can have more of an influence. We've actually secured an office in Williams Street. We want to, I don't know if there are any other grad students that have office and office hours in Williams Street. You know, these are things that we've been doing to move forward in this form. But to kind of bring full circle, the message that we've seen as a graduate student organization, and this is kind of encompassing of a lot of the diverse student organizations, we send it out to our community, but it's to Cornell as a whole. So if we're working from the back up, what we need more or less is for the Cornell community to go from the Cornell community to us. So and there's several ways to do this. And one main thing that I keep saying more, but I have several. But with the thing of and speaking of diversity, so in time of crisis, right, when we have these incidents, you know, we have the townhouses, right? We have the vice provost and the deans. They come. They have, you know, they speak to the community. The thing is, they're speaking to the community that necessarily conflicted, and not necessarily the other community, right? So it's paramount to students that have been afflicted of bias, you know. But the message is not as stern, strong, or, you know, we don't get the buy-in from the rest of the community, you know. Not so when it comes to, I think they have, the dining with the first leaders, I thought was fantastic, because I sat there with not just diversity student leaders. I sat there with the captain of, I think she was like, women's rowing. You know, I sat there with one of the co-chairs for the farmer's market. You know, people that are not in the community. This is where we need to get the message out. You know, we talk about this sometimes. You know, I think, you know, have a good assessment of some of the needs, And I think that by putting those means out to the greater community, we can do a greater community. Yeah.
Thank you, Chavez. Salam?
I just want to comment on what Adam mentioned about right. So, and also what Chavez was talking about, how a lot of things are also seamless. One of the things that's going on is I feel like students do have this burden of doing all the initiative taking, and I think especially with the select system, because it affects everyone, because it affects more than I think just students as well. We should not fund the system. We should not be looking to get violence, to get this organization, to get this program violence funded. Just as some of us have been doing, just as the university funds the TCAT to give us rides after 6 p.m. and on the weekends, why can't we use university money that doesn't come from students to fund a system that would get us on stage? So that's what I mean by like initiative, like student-led initiative. We shouldn't use the money that we need for our programming to protect ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Because he's older than Alex.
Okay, so I'm right on your bandwagon because I agree with you 100%. I think that the blue light bus system is antiquated. I think it's run by the wrong company. I think it's the wrong kind of vehicle. I think it's the wrong hours. And I'm building statistics to sort of help sell that. And I do agree that it is helping way more than the student population. There's a lot of employees on the campus that need to get back and forth to their cars, their places of business, where they're working, where they're taking classes and going to school late at night as well. Something that we've always known, but I've been unable to prove statistically until probably the last 2 months, literally. Last year in September, I had 12 escorts for the entire month. The entire month, 12 escorts. Just in September statistics, I had over 120, which doesn't sound like a lot. So there's 120 people that didn't feel comfortable walking from point A to point B. You see the ridership just off campus, just a little bit off the outreach, so down to the commons or just outside of the kind of the steward ad printer. That type of location for people in college town, places where we don't typically go, haven't gone in our walking escorts, we're now going. And after 3 o'clock, if my security escorts are not available to provide that, then it's my patrol officers that are providing that. If my patrol officers are providing that, then I can't be on the campus doing what I need them to do, what they're trained to do. So it's a resource that, yes, helps keep students safe, but actually the transportation issue, and one that might need to be looked at in the committee. And the only other thing I wanted to talk about, too, is what Phil brought up is, you can actually go ask somebody to use judicial code for electronic means, and if it needs to be clear, then that's pretty easy to
Thank you, Kathy. Alex?
So I actually wanted to ask about something that you said earlier, and that was yield. And I remember being pretty shocked the first time I saw statistics on the differences in yield between underrepresented minorities and majority students, especially when like specific financial aid programs are controlled for. So, I mean, this may be an unfair question because everyone here should have to come to Cornell, but do you have ideas on what is causing that low yield and what Cornell could do to change that and to improve that?
So I don't think that Cornell Financial Aid package is nice, but I don't think it's as competitive as our competitors and peer institutions. Again, I'll go back to marketing and advertising for it. It sounds great, but then when you get here, they don't really tell you that you have to pay for most students that get full financial aid. You probably don't have the best health insurance either. So when you get here, Cornell has this really high expectation for a fancy health insurance that you pay out of pocket and it's not included in the financial aid package. So that's $2,000 now. And Cornell and like other Ivy League institutions have a ton of savings that only keeps on increasing year after year, and it's not a very realistic goal for students to make that kind of money that they request for us to make over the summer. So I don't think that our financial aid package is as competitive as other schools. I also think that that even within the package, they don't give enough. Other schools give more allotment for like miscellaneous and for personal needs, and when you have students that are coming to a new place and do have greater needs, and that's not being covered by the package. So I think it's economic.
Can I follow up with that?
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you 100%. But I think it goes even further than that, because if you look at I don't remember the exact statistics, I don't want to give specific numbers, but my recommendation is if you look at underrepresented minorities who get financial aid and majority students that get financial aid, enrollment is very similar. And ones that don't get financial aid, there's a huge difference even when you control for economic circumstances. I think that applies. Do you think there are other reasons in there? Because to me, at least, it seems a mystery, and that no one has given me a good theory or analysis, and maybe that means no one's done it, and we need to investigate more. But I'm just wondering if you guys have any insight or anything out there, because I think that's a really big problem if the enrollment, again, I don't remember the precise figures, but if something like that, and the majority of students in particular.
I mean, I'm sure the other big part is cultural, and I don't think that all of these incidents are happening on campus, which students that are readily available to national media and know about what's going on at Cornell. If I were a senior in high school, I don't know, I would think twice about applying to Cornell and coming. I know that when I was applying, I was accepted that same spring where all of the suicide and suicide cluster happened. And people who weren't applying to Cornell, I'm from Florida, and Florida people were telling me, like, making me reconsider Cornell. So that's one thing, but then when you add up the hate crimes and bad incidents that are making national press that are happening at Cornell, you think about what it will especially going forward.
So in terms of diversity and enrollment, I think one of the things that that influences whether or not students are coming down here are their experiences coming down here in April after they get accepted. And within diverse community, we have our diverse people 2 months, and it used to be a weekend in the month into a month where students will come on days that we have prelims, so we can't talk to them, can't tell them, oh yeah, there's great culture, there's great, we can't do that. Because they see us at a time where we can't give them all our attention. And I think, and I'm sure like other people here can speak on what they believe, but having a weekend, although it might seem like it's a false reality, I think it just shows students that, hey, we're here. Hey, there's a Latino community here. Hey, there's an actual Black population here. And that, yeah, we have to work, but, you know, we're here. Just seeing them there when you get here is a lot better than you coming here, you know, at a time that just seems to be sitting here for, I think, like the university. I just have to make sure you rent days and weeks, but I mean, I think it's better to also rent my time and then be up here.
Just to add on to that, I mean, even just like in general, Cornell days, support guides, for prospective students, I just remember when I visited, there wasn't much talked about in terms of what's out there for students of color, students with different non-majority backgrounds. It really wasn't out there. And I've actually been on, as an RA, I'm on campus and I've been, and I'm an RA at the program house, so the cultural women running with it. And I've been like walking on those campuses and seen poor guys like not able to know all of the program houses that exist, or saying them that like, oh, there's a Chinese house here, and I'm like, there's actually no Chinese program house that exists. And I was actually, you know, or like, you know, oh, there's a Hispanic program house, and I'm like, oh, it's the Latino Living Center. It's like, I shouldn't have to do that if I'm not there. These people don't know even the correct resources that exist. And that's problematic, because, I mean, you know, people coming here on tours, I remember coming and kind of wondering what is there for students of color, what is there for students of the African diaspora, what is there for other people from the Midwest like me, of similar backgrounds. And so I think that we can also do more with that whole experience, not just Cornell based, but just all different prospective students sort of initiatives that happen to really, you know, unveil all that is here to do.
and all that is there for students to tell our people what the challenge is.
I'd love to follow up with all of you on that.
Thank you.
Evan?
I think also, we're talking about with our care institutions, like, you know, like, I remember when I visited schools, and I visited Brown, and I visited UPenn, and the experience that I had there was tremendous compared to Cornell, and just being real, because I would have wanted to study at Penn, and if it wasn't for that, I really probably wouldn't have come here, and I think that's the problem that we're talking about, these are our competitors, but we're so far behind in terms of how that experience of when you first get accepted and all that sort of thing. I know this is a much bigger school than a lot of the other Ivies and that sort of thing dealing with that. But even like one thing, and I think because it falls on us, and in terms of diversity in admissions, like CU Image is a student organization, and they're basically charged with dealing with the admissions process for students of color. So they're the ones planning all of our calling students of color, you know, making sure they have the application process. They should have a little more help from the university as a whole, because it's like falling. I know the president is our friend Kiki, it's kind of falling on her to deal with every minority student that is applying to Cornell. That's a lot for students to deal with. You know, and it seems like she is, and her e-board, that's they're doing it as a student organization by themselves. You know, something like SWAG for us, which talks about the just thing with Black Men on Campus or whatever, and that's a program that we had to create as BSU for Black Men on Campus, because we saw their numbers in terms of graduation rates was the lowest of all groups on campus, and that's kind of unacceptable for us, but it took students to do that. You know, it's kind of like, well, where was the administrative support for that? And now we were getting it, but it was kind of part of it had to be us.
Kind
of
shed light on that one
for you. So just kind of getting that
support for where school will be working. Chichi, Shimin, Okafor,
and
Reggie.
Yes,
right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Evan?
I thank the UA for holding this meeting. That's great. Thanks for all of you coming. Thanks especially for inviting Shimin. You know, I know, thanks to you guys for kind of coming. Short notice. My first question was going to be basically what Mrs. was, to make sure that you, because you weren't on the agenda, haven't had a chance to add anything. Shabbat spoke for a while, and Tina, do you have any particular things to add? I should say I apologize for being late. This may have come up already, but I wanted to make sure you specifically had a chance, and then I have a second question.
I can.
Oh, my second question was just going to be about this student-led versus administration-led kind of thing. I don't know what the administration thinks, but I know that I would guess that they're concerned about, I don't know, if you're heavy-handed or top-down or you know, these sorts of negative kind of things. I guess to distill that question for all of you, I would say if you have specific advice to the administration or the State Hall to try and strike that balance. You know, I agree with you. It is the responsibility of the administration to do all of these various sorts of things. But how can they strike that careful balance between making it clear that they're supporting student-led initiatives, that they're encouraging ground-up innovative student ideas that are coming, you know, from the communities that they're affecting, while at the same time saying, you know, look, it's our responsibility to make sure the students are safe on campus, the students can get home from the library at 4 in the morning, etc.
Okay. Well, I think actually I just wanted to say that I also want to recognize that I have worked very closely with a lot of administrators, and I can feel that the administration does very much care about these issues, and that the Dean of Students' Office is meeting with, I think all of us have met with Dean Hubble at some point, Dr. Alexander, President Scorton, Vice President Susan Murphy. We've met with these people, and I know that a lot of assistant Dean of Students, I mean, you mentioned Patricia, but a lot of other people out of Willow Street Hall do go out of their way to address these issues we're bringing up. However, I think the problem is that we look at it as administration and students, and it's a larger community than that. I think there are administrators that want to do something, but then where do faculty come in? Where do trustees come in? Why, we should be talking about these issues also with those people as well. I think that it would be wonderful if, you know, when faculty get together to talk about these things, that we bring up what the students have going on when they come to class versus when they leave. How I know female students in engineering classes that have talked about sexism they experienced in the classroom, or racial, or talking about race in a government class in a way that is poorly facilitated, that triggers a lot of things for people. So now how to facilitate that? Where do you come in as faculty? Where do trustees come in, and the amount of impact they have, and what we choose to do, and where the administration chooses to go? So I think that we kind of like to look at it as administrators and students. There's so many other people, the staff members, other people, connect. I recently did a talk and performance about the Hurricane Fairs with the whole Gannett staff, and that was the first time we've done that. But I mean, looking at that, Gannett covered not just physical but emotional and mental health. Where are all these other resources on campus? And we should be talking about these issues with them as well. And I think that's just something maybe to bring up. I mean, in terms of not just administrator versus students, but the whole community of people. And we shouldn't rely on, we shouldn't also only point to specific administration to handle it or just students. I think it's everyone's responsibility because it all affects us.
I just wanted to add, the term administrators usually say consider faculty to be a part of the administration, not technically, but part of the people that should be involved with the process. But you said you're talking about the administration being heavy-handed, and personally, I can't speak for others, but I want the administration to be heavy-handed. When you look at the statistics, the statistics show that the number one bitch drinkers on campus generally are white males. And so, like, when things happen on campus that are related to alcohol and are related to these things, I want the administration to be heavy-handed because it is not me or anybody else on this panel that's drinking and creating, like, the habits that we face as minority students when we're attacked on the street. I had my friend that was attacked over the weekend was attacked by a group of white males. And then a group of white males held him down to continue to be punched in them and kicked in the face. And so I want the administration to be heavy-handed. We were having a conversation with Kathy Zoner about having cameras installed, and the administration didn't even want it. I want cameras in public areas. I want to know that somebody is watching to make sure that we are safe, because at the moment, it's bad to feel like a victim, but I think that a lot of us are afraid and a lot of us are feeling like victims on the campus, and we want somebody to be able to protect us.
Keenan?
Hi, my name is Keenan. I'm from SAGA, the Society for Asian American Grad Affairs. Thank you for inviting me, Liz, and also the UA Assembly. I just want to talk a little bit about two things. I think my colleagues here have spoke a lot about a variety of issues, and I've also talked to other administrators and, which included people in my college of engineering. The overwhelming sensation that I have from talking is there is a rift between students, faculty, and administrators. Right? I mean, Cornell is a top research school, so we one of the things that we hire faculty for is to do research. But the interesting thing is, what do we do research for? Right? I mean, besides curiosity, we're doing it for humanity, for humankind, right? Why do we make TVs, projectors, computers, right? So that humanity can, so humans can benefit. Same with physicists, mathematicians. Maybe they will not realize their inventions for, a decade, maybe two. But why do we hire them? So I think the group that's been missing in a huge presence is the faculty. Right. They are responsible for teaching, for holding office hours for homework, but there's not such thing like an office hour for diversity or office hour for recent incidences that have happened. And I've also talked to associate deans in engineering that's responsible for diversity. Well, they're understaffed. There are a lot of challenges with how do you respond to incidents of violent trafficking, right? I had to go call them up to say, hey, these things have happened. Can you put out a letter saying that you don't, you know, this is terrible, right? And what are we working towards to solve these issues? So, and engineering is an example where I think there is a larger presence of the diversity program. It's called DPE, right? Diversity Programming in Engineering. And they have professional staff. But I know a lot of other schools and departments don't have these programming, right? So how are these departments responding to these problems? Not only on a, you know, let's say if things happen today, are they going to say anything tomorrow, a week from now? And I know that the university asks every department to, I think it's a once a semester or once a year, to report on their, on their diversity findings and programming. But that's too slow, right? And who's on this board? How many students are on the board, right? And you know, so in summary, I would like to see some focus areas on the faculty, and also on the individual schools and departments. Because as most of us, we spend the most time, well, aside from homework, is dealing with faculty. You know, that's our first line. So, but, you know, because in some sense we don't focus on faculty, we have to go to deans, right? So there's sort of like a supplementary role in which we can go help them. I mean, the problem is that, you know, there's like 100 people for one dean. You know, Patricia at the A3C Center, she sees so many people per day, and so much Dr. Alexander. So we have huge underutilized resources at our disposal, which is faculty and staff. Okay.
Thank you, Keenan. Sorry.
Can I just pick up on that for a minute? Thanks very much. And thanks for your comments on the heavy handedness. I agree with you 100%. Obviously, there are things that the administration, faculty, fellow students need to have a handle on. It's just not acceptable. And we can't fade in responses. We can't quite lightly. On the faculty question, I think, I wonder if this, to what degree we agree with the statement that, that this is maybe part of an antiquated notion that, that faculty are responsible for the academic life, and then there's the sort of the everything else. You know, I think this is a comment that kind of comes from a certain kind of privilege, right? That, that there's, you know, you focus on the academics and then there's the kind of the other stuff. And I think one thing that's underlying this whole discussion is that that dichotomy doesn't exist. That there's no the academics and the other stuff. There is student life. There's the whole package. And that includes the environment, social connections, classmates, relationships with faculty, with staff, with administrators, everything. And that this is just as much the faculty's responsibility, what happens outside of the classroom, as what happens for that 50 minutes on a Wednesday afternoon. Suggestions how, you know, one communicates this. I think to some degree there's a generational thing here. The younger faculty are coming in, they don't see the world in those stark terms. They see it holistically. Of course, there's been a huge and commendable push for diversity and hiring initiatives to diversify the faculty, which I think deals with some of this from the ground up. But how do you get to that older generation of faculty, some of whom, not all, obviously, you know, might say, well, that's not my job. You know, I don't feel that.
I think we can respond to this in two ways. One, I think you know, a great point is the newer faculty that's coming in and some of the new perspectives that we have, and you know, some of these guys haven't been out of, you know, the actual college or academic stream for that much time, where, you know, they're that far removed from the day-to-day journey of a graduate student or undergraduate student. So I think by one thing is by open communications, and this is something that we all take part in, for from student wise and faculty staff, is to start creating those relationships, start creating those conversations with each other. So more representation from graduate, undergraduate, and the faculty staff meeting, more faculty staff at the GPSA and also the diversity meetings as well. So creating those relationships. That's the thing, but also, coming from some of the old faculty members, having the message and the correct tone of the message coming from, someone that they would listen to. So some of the top administrators, some of their own peers, whomever the head of the faculty senate, or somebody completely outside, but has the respect of his colleagues, her colleagues, that can relay the message that this is paramount to the progression, not only of academics, but of the overall students.
If I can intercede just for a second here, I'm trying to keep an eye on the time, and I'd like to move to extend the meeting by 10 minutes.
Okay.
Any opposition to this motion?
What time is it?
It is currently 5:59.
I propose that anybody that have anywhere to be at this moment can be excused. Now, any oppositions to the motion? Okay. Motion is passed.
Do you need thank you for coming.
All right, thank you. Gregory will have the last question of the day.
Thanks. This has been great. As a graduate of the university, I served on the student assembly as vice president of finance, as vice president of recruitment for the fraternity council. So I've heard a lot about what you said, and I have some sort of questions in that. This has really been challenging for me to sort of understand and get a grasp on things and how I perceive things and how I look at it. So I think this dialogue is really important and really healthy, and I really appreciate everything that you all do to represent your interests in the greater Cornell. I think that's a great point that you made when we talk about the university. I think we should provide specific terms. We should say David Scorton, Mary Opperman, the Board of Trustees. Put specific labels on those, because we are the university. All of us make up the university, and I think various groups are doing their part. I think some groups are not doing their part. So I think we just should be specific when we say the university needs to do more. What part of the university? Things like that. I kind of have two questions. One is sort of this, long shot idea is, when is diversity no longer an issue? What does that Cornell look like? What is the ideal? Have we proposed some sort of summit or meeting of the minds where we can articulate? We use percentages to discuss, minority groups, and what is that ideal? What is healthy and acceptable and okay? What is the culture of that Cornell? And then working backwards, how do we get there? How do each group have specific takeaways? Because I know that there's a lot of different groups who are very passionate about all these sorts of topics. Would we be better fit to centralize those resources in some way and provide each one of those groups a specific charge to tackle their issue rather than going after this big beast that sometimes seems unsolvable? So I would sort of throw that out there if there's some way we could facilitate some sort of diversity summit of let's paint that picture when we're not having these tough conversations anymore. It's that ideal for now. What does that look like and how do we get there? Putting that on paper and saying, okay, here's our 5-year plan, which will hit all of these metrics along the way and try to make a step forward. And then, my next sort of thought or comment, I guess, really is, Cesar, you mentioned, I'm looking at notes and really different things. About the Greek system and being underrepresented, and then student governing boards and funding boards being underrepresented. How are you encouraging the communities that you feel are underrepresented to take action and take leadership and get on those boards and get representation on those funding arms? And, you know, I'm a fraternity advisor for my fraternity. We like to think we have a relatively diverse organization. But we don't see those students coming to our doors. What can we do as a system to get more students to us so that we can recruit them? You know, we have a strong multicultural Greek letter organization on campus. How do we sort of blur those lines a little bit? Those sorts of things are all questions in my mind. I mean, I know I didn't really ask much of anything, but I'm trying to work this out in my mind, and I really appreciate everybody for what they had to say.
Adam?
Did you want to speak?
I saw you have something to add.
Oh, you can add and then I'll answer.
Oh, okay, sure. No, just to get some perspective on sort of what the SA is doing, because we have been speaking to Oscar a lot about it with different bodies like Appropriations Committee, like Student Assembly Finance Commission, and then how we can look at that on a macro level for campus. From what I've learned from the conversations, on the one hand, it definitely is the responsibility of these student leaders to go to their communities and say, you know, go to these organizations or go to these recruitment. But we're also going to be implementing very active steps to actually go out to those communities. So for recruitment of SA committees next spring, we're going to have, you know, maybe go to their general bodies and explain what committees we have and the applications process behind it. And that's just one example of an initiative. So I think it's kind of a two-way street, or at least how we're going to be moving forward with it.
Yeah, so that's one of the things, to answer one of your questions, what I've been doing is I've met with a bunch of administrators, everyone that I've mentioned, Adam, Ari, and I've talked to them about my issues with the last year with the Student Assembly, Assembly Appropriations Committee, which relies on like $1 million SBDP, the student fees, and they came up with, together we came up with a way to solve that, which includes the recruitment and selections process. And I think that's a wonderful step forward to make it a more holistic process and realize that it's important to have diversity on these boards, to have a great understanding of how our money would be used. In terms of the degree system, I think we have to recognize that not so long ago, a lot of these Greek chapters didn't accept our fathers and our grandfathers. So for a long time, there might not, I wouldn't join a fraternity or Earth. And there is a history there that that kind of goes into your next question, that is, when do we solve diversity or when do we stop talking about it at Cornell? And we can't stop talking about it at Cornell when it continues to be a national issue, because it will continue to be an issue at Cornell when it remains a national issue. It will continue to be something that we need to study and address. When the median income for a black or Latino family is $6,000, the median or net wealth is $6,000 for a black or Latino family, but over $100,000 for a white family in the U.S., when that continues to exist, when black students and Latino students are graduating at a 50-60% high school graduation rate, and right now we're talking about affirmative action, which isn't really addressing how the K-12 education system is addressing our community's needs. When those things aren't solved, we can't, diversity won't be solved at Cornell, because we are sort of at the highest level. We accept the students that went through these flawed systems, and it's up to Cornell to find solutions that are not just how do we fix diversity at Cornell and how do we all get along, but what role will Cornell play at a national level, international level, to solve a lot of these issues.
Just to add on to that, I think Cornell currently is a very, in terms of more sort of diversity, is kind of acting as a pluralistic institution that wants to have, you know, these numbers and wants to have different resources and have things available. But in terms of actually, like, and I'm not at all denying that there are several initiatives and people working very hard on this mission. But I don't think in terms of really being as an institution reflecting the power it has to really be innovative and be something that can be a social justice institution. And when I use the term social justice, I mean in terms of being progressive enough to say we want to have, you know, people when they come into the school have
having to take a class that's going to address, that's going to teach them that race is a social construct, that gender is. So we want to have an institution in which all faculty address that, you know, address social construct, even in a biology setting versus, you know, versus not only just in the humanities. I think that's something that we can do. And also, I just would like to add to something you were saying, and I completely agree that it's very important that we have, you know, a more diverse essay, UA, and all of that. But I also think that sometimes when we talk about these issues and talking about, you know, having more representation, it's not a matter of also having, oh, we have, you know, we don't want to tokenize also as well and have a, we need a black person on this. But also, I mean, where is the mainstream coming out of its, out of the mainstream to step into these other circles? It shouldn't always have to be people on the fringe stepping into the mainstream, but where are we having, how do we promote an interest in learning more from ISD and Penn College? How do we promote an interest in these mainstream organizations to go to a Haven meeting, learn about transphobia, learning about other types of communities and people that they may not be aware of that exist? So I don't think it's always about having, you know, the underrepresented people come in. It's also very important to encourage those in the nation to educate themselves, just because once we leave Cornell, it's a big world out there. Cornell is just one place. And to be aware for your own personal self, but also how do you know, like, knowing how to interact with other people. So I think that's what they also think.
Jim, last point.
So thank you very much for everyone coming. I know this is a very hot topic right after the campus. So if I had the potential last word, where is the UA going from here? I heard an awful lot of seeming consensus that we should be pursuing a freshman course that's more than, you know, an hour long. I heard concern about cyberbullying may not be very clear in the code. That's something we can clearly task the Codes and Judicial Committee to look at and advise us on. I heard acceptance versus matriculation. I would add to that graduation, and then 18 months later, follow up on success. Are they back to grad school? Are they unemployed? Do they have a job that's within the means of their field? Those statistics exist. One of the things that we might consider being able to do, like we do with crime or the statistics, the you know, disciplinary statistics in the university, is request Susan Murphy and others come once a year to brief the good, the bad, and the ugly, and keep focus on certain metrics and that where is the strategic plan addressing these, what is the long-term plan. We heard in the employee assembly that there's all these diversity initiatives and they're going to hold deans accountable to statistics, but what does accountability really mean? Well, you know, for a while they can say, well, we're trying, but after a while that doesn't cut it anymore. You know, it's the same statistics on acceptance and matriculation, faculty recruitment versus faculty acceptance. Mm-hmm. Those statistics, how many faculty of color were offered a job and chose not to come and teach here and chose a different school to teach at? There's many ways to keep a focus on it that's appropriate and helpful. I would recommend that the exec committee take up next steps because information is great, but if we all go back and don't try and do two or three things to improve this year, we haven't helped take a step forward.
This is exactly why we are having this meeting today. There was a lot of great points discussed and mentioned. I hope today's meeting have provided the UA with the necessary information to start the process of change. The executive board will definitely go back, review these notes, and we will come up, and I hope all UA members will help us with this, take up the issues addressed today and brainstorm initiatives and resolutions to better include the members of Cornell campus, and I mean all members. So thank you again, all the speakers who took the time to be here today, and the UA will definitely try to address everything that was said today. I now motion to adjourn the meeting. unanimous. Adjourn this meeting at 6:12 p.m.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.